previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Joni, baby, are you okay?
Fine, just don't freak out on me.
Sorry, do you think that was just a preview and like a bigger one's coming, or was that to find
something? Hey, listen, you're not helping.
Don't be such a wimp, Haley.
Hey,
your
Joni.
Sister's scared. Be nice.
You always take her side.
Joni.
Hey, listen, guys. Jesus. People, it's toast.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 127 for the week of August 22nd, 2016. I am Dataset David T. Cole, and I'm here with CompuServe customer Sarah D. Bunting.
This string of numbers is deeply personal.
Battering Ram, Tara Ariano.
I don't actually know what Ram is.
And Corrupted File, Philip Michaels.
Error, error, kill all humans.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Extra Hot Grape. Before we get started for realsies, I have a little bit of follow-up from last week. Eliza McCall actually called the Press Your Luck contestants number
Woo!
That I suggested somebody call.
Bless her heart.
Jest. And she did. And she reports back, it is disconnected, goes nowhere. That is a little sad. I kind of wish somebody would get that number and then, like, take registrations. And,
You know, in a way, it's the ultimate whammy that she suffered.
Yeah. So that is your follow-up. And now on with the show, Tara, take it away.
All right. Welcome to our guest, Philip Michaels. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Yay. Hello. I lost my clip.
Yay.
There we go.
Phil is here to discuss Halt and Catch Fire, which he has been covering for us on previously.tv for season two and will resume with season three, which premieres as we record this in a couple of days, as this drops, I guess, later tonight. And although I heard a rumor from Alan Sepinwall on Twitter that as we record this on Sunday, the premiere, the first episode of season three is actually secretly dropping on AMC tonight, hidden on your guide as a super long Talking Dead, which no one wants, by the way, especially one that follows Fear the Walking Dead. It's like the double thing no one definitely wants. But anyway, I don't know if that's true as we record this, so proceed with caution. The first two episodes of season three of Halt and Catch Fire will air on Tuesday, August 23rd. So we have seen them and we will be discussing them. And if you don't want to know plot details, now you have been warned. All right, Phil, let us begin with the way the first episode of season three begins, which is Boz in his element, really feeling himself, singing some Sinatra. I was hopeful this would mean this meant it's going to be the summer of Boz. Does not look that way. Let's talk about Boz.
No, they give with one hand and they take away with the other, because they know that Boz is the fan favorite on this show.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's doing karaoke. He's stalling at a mutiny launch event, because mutiny, as we remember from the end of last season, as I'm watching the show, I was trying to remember all the characters' names, like,
yeah.
Oh, there's that guy and mustache and the lady with the beauty mark, and they all moved to California, uprooted from Texas, which I thought was the original point of the show, sort of this Texas style tech show. But now they're in Silicon Valley and they've gotten their mainframe up and running, and mutiny is not doing as well as it might, as suggested by the snotty InfoWorld reporter they've invited to the event, who is not impressed by Boz singing his Sinatra.
Yeah. And things get worse for Boz when Joe calls, because and for me also, because I had sort of been hoping, oh, maybe we're done with Joe, because he's hardly in the first episode at all. But then he does show up.
In a way, I kind of like that he was not in a lot of the first episode, not because I dislike the character. I just liked him as this creeping menace that everyone is aware of. But we can't mention his name or else he'll actually appear if you look in a mirror.
I really like how much they're leaning into the dark Steve Jobs thing this season.
Yeah.
They are not being subtle about it. And
no, it's basically if Steve Jobs and Larry Ellison had a baby,
yep.
And they might have in real life.
But there's also the McAfee connection too, right? Because his whole thing is antivirus, and that guy's a total creep too. So maybe there's a bit of him mixed in too.
Oh my
god,
that'd be great.
And not to get ahead of ourselves, but in a future episode, Lee Pace wears some pants that are just unsupportable in any way.
That is true. Yeah, I. That character was sort of drifting in season two. without really much to do. But I feel like, much like they course corrected a lot from 1 to 2, I think maybe we're looking at a course correction for Joe in 2 to 3, and basically just making him the megalomaniac tech guy in Silicon Valley, you know, taking
promising wonderful things. Oh, I'm going to give this to you for free.
Yeah.
And it's,
I'm hopeful that that character will come into its own, because it was, as Tara was saying to me yesterday, he's in danger of becoming the Pierce of this show, which is shorthand for the character you can lift out of a show without changing it much. You know, and I think that's something that the writers probably felt and are looking to address in season 3. At least it feels that way to me so far.
Yeah.
There's also an argument to be made for Gordon being the Pierce too, and he's someone Gordon. That Phil really hated a lot in season 2, and rightly so. When you talk about where Gordon's journey has taken him this season,
I want to emphasize here, because I've been finishing up the recaps of the first couple episodes. I want to emphasize, I like the actor just fine. He does a good job with the material that he's given. He's just, the writers don't give him a chance. He starts the show. They keep him in the basement like he's a troll, and his brain injury is getting. They've given him a brain injury, and the brain injury doesn't make him a sympathetic character. And it's. It's continuing apace. He seems to be no longer wanting to just sort of do the things that Donna has asked him to do and be the mainframe maintenance guy. He's humiliated within the first 5 minutes of the season premiere, if you share my hatred of Gordon. So that he has that going for him. But yeah, he's a problematic character in that it just seems, from season 1 through now, that the writers get together and say, what kind of humiliating things can we pile upon this guy? When can we break him? And
I hadn't watched the show prior to this, and I really liked the episodes that I saw. I might keep watching it, but I don't have the background on the characters and like who they're basically supposed to be. Is this the Steve Wozniak?
Yeah.
He started out in season 1 as the Steve Wozniak. They kind of got away from that. Basically, he's the guy who's very bright and wants to do big things, and circumstances and his own personality have conspired against him to where he is just sort of the left behind man. There was a certain poignancy in season 2 as his wife is building this interesting company and he's just kind of puttering around in his garage. Snorting cocaine. He doesn't do that anymore. He just smokes marijuana with the coders. It started out as a Wozniak character. Now he's just sort of the guy who's bright enough to see the future, but not driven enough to do anything.
And illustrating that is his half-ass dust measure down in the basement. When he discovers that the coders upstairs, when they're stomping around, dislodges dust and dirt from between the cracks into the basement where the servers are. His solution is to build this corrugated metal shelf directly over the servers, where in fact what you need to do is, well, ideally stop it at the source, but saving that, you need to put a tarp up by the ceiling so the particulate matter doesn't get dislodged in the first place, because that particular matter is going to just fly around like dust. A little shelf over the server ain't gonna do shit. And that's expensive stuff. So I'm saying his head ain't right, obviously, in season 3. And, you know, he spent good money. He went down to whatever the 1980s Home Depot equivalent was. He bought all that stuff. And it is a waste, because that dust is still gonna get in there, people.
Well, the other problem for Gordon from a story perspective is that Donna's his wife, her true soulmate is clearly Cameron, and he's now the fifth wheel in this relationship, and he can tell and they can tell and no one can say anything. But whenever Gordon dies, no one's going to be that sad, unfortunately. Maybe his kids. I mean, I'm just saying, it seems like they're heading to him having some kind of, you know, death or serious disability.
The guy from Empire with their terminal diseases that never become terminal.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Lucius Lyon.
Well, I actually have a question about, I have a couple of questions. One of them is for Dave, and it's sort of a more general question vis-a-vis like the timelines and when we're supposed to be. And I'm just wondering if that really drives you bazoo. watching this, because I was taken out of it a little bit, wondering, like, did CompuServe exist at this time? Like, I'm just taking their word for it. I'm not going to look it up.
Well, I
but
there
I was
somebody
wondering
on
if
this
show gives you fits.
Yeah, there is somebody on this show who is much better equipped to answer those kind of questions. That is tech writer Philip Michael.
I believe that it did exist at this time. I think I placed the show around 1986.
Yeah.
Because there's the scene that I really Columbo'd this out. There's the scene where Boz goes to place a phone call and he puts two dimes in the payphone and 20 cents, and the switchover in California was around 1985.
Wow.
In fact, I was in a play once where it was in the 1980s, and the playwright, it was a originally produced play, and the playwright had written the word "it's your dime" when someone calls him, and he was told to change it to "it's your 20 cents" to make it accurate. And in my opinion, that really destroyed the scene, and that's why the play closed after a few weeks.
Well, it is the show. You know, it is the '80s through today's lens. Like, there is a deep look at VC funding and how that all works, and that is such a now issue, such a now yep. you know obsession.
Also, the privacy with the chat logs too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And they argue about how GIF is pronounced.
I left that.
So I think that, you know, Sarah,
we've had that argument and I lost
sort of temporal standing, you know, like it makes it feel a little more modern, even though it's set in the 80s, because we're, you know, they're dealing with today's issues, you know, in a not bad way. I think they do it pretty well. It's believable. I tell you what's not believable
Here
is that
go.
Impact font on the Are You Safe?
I was waiting for
slide
it.
/ newspaper ad. That did not come for years and years later. That's one of the web safe fonts that Microsoft introduced. Not at this time, obviously. That took me out. Come on, guys.
The one that drives me nuts about the show is when they use background music that was clearly not recorded in the era, or cover versions of songs not recorded in the era. Last year, they did a version of Love Will Tear Us Apart, but they didn't use Joy Division. They used some 21st century schmuckos to sing the song, and that really ground my gears.
Well, and Cameron just generally seems like she's a linen overalls wearing Darlene from Mr. Robot, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, she just seems like she came from another time and no one's talking about it. I mean, I'm really interested in their sort of battle as women, but I also feel like it's doing this thing that Mad Men occasionally did, which was to cheat it and just be like, but, you know, we're more enlightened than that, wink, wink. Like,
right.
Okay, but, you know, that's not why we're watching the show, is, you know, to believe in you, the showrunners, as human beings and feminists. Like, just show what really happened and don't do a bunch of Gordon Gekko-y speech making that's kind of underlining it unnecessarily. I like the character. I just think she's a little too, like, anachronistic.
Apart from Gordon, she's the character they have the most problem writing for, because she spent most of season two mooning over a fella, which didn't really work so well for me.
And then in season one, she was basically Tank Girl. So it was quite an abrupt change. And I'm not quite sure what her path is supposed to be. And it seems like
hanging out with a 10-year-old, apparently, is the plot thing they've settled on this year.
Yeah. Although, speaking of the women, I do like the addition of Annabeth Gish this season. She was not so great an addition when she was parachuted in after
the
X-Files.
Let's pause to admire the rarity of that sentence.
I know. I'm saying I think she's good so far.
Yeah.
I liked her at the school. I thought I liked that she was like a very matter of fact, like, I'm not going to be that precious kind of mom.
Yeah.
And her body be banging when she was changing into her gym clothes in that bathroom. So she's got that going for her, too. But I like the addition of her to the Donna Cameron story. I think that there's a lot of potential in the three of them together. And $20 well spent from Cameron in that second episode, too.
I had a note here, and somebody's got to remind me why I put this in. I have the pen! Exclamation mark.
The pen! Your pen!
Right, Cameron! Cameron has uses the best pen in the universe, which is the blue-topped, white-tipped four-color pen from Bic. This is a pen that all the nurses, that my mom was a nurse and all her nurse compadres used. And I was obsessed with as a kid because it's got like, you know, black and blue and red and green ink all in one. And you get the little clickers and the pen goes up and down and changes. But she would never let me use it. Like, not jokingly, be like, no, this is a work pen. Dave, you don't get to use it. Here is a black pen and a red pen. Go nuts. But the pen.
And so, when Dave got to be in his late 30s, he realized he could buy a box of those pens and live the high life.
Oh, those pens are all over. They're in my gym bag. They're on my desk. They're in my camera bag. Anyway,
your mother was right to forbid you from using it, because I had that pen as a kid. And what I would do is play around with the little switches and make the ink go up and down instead of actually paying attention to things I was supposed to be writing notes about.
Well,
I was not allowed to have it because it was considered like a wasteful, like not a good investment, not a good return on investment, because there wasn't, because the chamber, like it was bigger, but the ink cartridges would be narrower, so you didn't get as much ink and you'd always run out of one first. And my father just like didn't believe in them.
Classic.
Nor did he believe in spiral notebooks. Like, I sometimes think my parents were like hit by a bolt of Mennonites at some point, because they're like, spiral notebooks, we're not doing that. Like, we're not. Okay.
My dad didn't like spiral notebooks either.
The sighting of the pen was the most excited I've ever been watching an episode of Halt and Catch Fire. I was like, oh my God, it's a pen! You and me, Cameron!
Cut to Dave making a Halt and Catch Fire inspired t-shirt with Cameron and her pen that no one else will like.
A pen! Give me my pen! Yeah, anyway, so that was fun.
I think you're giving short shrift to the robot butler. He's a butler, man! That's what butlers do!
Poor boss.
And let's not forget gay Matt from Melrose being a complete creepball.
Yes. So many layers in this episode. Well, I'm glad that you liked it, Sarah, because when it opened with that Sinatra song, I was like, maybe? Because I know that's a Bundy thing, but yeah, the rest of it, who knows? So it's a good show. Yeah, and you can really jump in from this point too. People were saying that about season two, because season one was like got such mixed reviews. We bailed on it pretty early, but season two is so good, and season three is too so far.
Season one is quite unwatchable, if I may say, because I watched some of it as background when I started recapping season two, and I eventually just I've gotten the flavor of it.
Right.
I'm gonna go to the internet and read plot points because I don't need to see anything else that happens.
There's a scene Joe McMillan is talking about his virus campaign, a free virus, antivirus, free viruses. Welcome. And he's talking
not to a very good business, actually.
He's talking to make work. He's talking to his marketing team, and he's like, "Look, guys, this doesn't need to be in the Babbages of the world. It needs to be in the Safeways and the 7-Elevens of the world, right? I mean, and that's sort of what they've done with the show. Like the first season was like really like." To the metal, you know, assembly language nerdy stuff going on. Plus, it was boring. And the seasons since then have been much more accessible, much like Doom. You remember when Doom was shareware and then suddenly you can get a Doom disc at 7-Eleven for $2, you know, and take it home and install it that way? I feel like the show has kind of learned that lesson too. It's like, okay, we need to stop, speaking to just this one group, throw the net wider, and it's become a much better show. For it.
Yep, me too. And so make sure you check out all of Phil's coverage this whole season at previously.tv.
All right.
Hello, everybody. That's the creepy music cue that means it's time for The Blotter Presents. This week, I will be talking about a new MTV series that started, as we record this, last Wednesday after Catfish. And it's kind of like Catfish meets 48 Hours meets Making a Murderer, I guess. It's called Unlocking the Truth, and it has two hosts, Ryan Ferguson, who served 10 years for the murder of a Kansas City sports writer. He was not arrested until 3 years afterward, after the murder. He didn't do it, and it took them 10 years to get him out. So now he's like back in the world, and this is what he's doing, is like this innocence project, but like on TV. And he's partnered up with an attorney named Eva Nagao, and they also are partnering with like the Midwest Innocence Project and a bunch of like actual on the ground attorneys to look into a couple of cases, Calvin Michael Smith and Michael Paulite, I think it's pronounced. These are men that claim that they were unjustly convicted and imprisoned, and they're going to investigate. Ryan and Eva are going to investigate. And if they think it's compelling, they're going to try to get these guys out. And if they don't, they won't. I'm into it so far. Like, as I said, when I say that it's sort of a blend of Catfish and 48 Hours, that's also kind of the quality level that I'm talking about. Like, you do have a little bit, I think Eva is maybe not accustomed to being like in the Max chair and sort of doing this like exposition slash leading questions slash, you know, these are the issues of the day. So that's feeling a little stiff, but they have picked interesting cases. They have packaged the information so far. We haven't really gotten into Calvin Smith yet, but the other case, like they've sort of built it so that justice, you're like, well, but why didn't anybody interview the dad? Then one of the sisters is like, well, it is a little weird that nobody ever interviewed our dad. It's based in Kansas City, which I sort of think is neat. Like, nothing is ever based in Kansas City. I like Kansas City. I thought that was cool. I'm cautiously into it. I don't know. Like, it's interesting to me that this took so long for MTV to do. Like, it does seem like now that true crime is sort of not hip again, but it did seem like they would try to do something. They would try to like get a foot in that sector and get their demographic on board with it. Maybe they thought, what was the show called, Tara? The like weird spinoff?
Suspect.
Maybe that was their attempt to do that, but I'm a little surprised that it took this long. But yeah, it's a little fillery. It's, you know, it's a little stilted now, you know, they're just starting out, but like they do get people to talk to them. These are interesting cases and I would recommend it. Ryan Ferguson is very charismatic and I think it's pretty cool that he spent the ages of 19 to 29 locked up and now he's trying to get a guy who is in the same cell block he used to be in out of prison. And so like they're chatting on the phone. He's like, how's JD doing? Like, I don't know. It's interesting. There's nothing else quite like it on TV. So is it, I think it's staying in the same lane after Catfish, okay, but they're moving it up an hour, moving everything up an hour. I don't know.
Not sure. I don't think so. I think Catfish is staying at 10. They do. MTV does show originals at 11 Eastern. So they might be leaving it there because of the subject matter, perhaps because it's not, you know.
Yeah, fit for kids, it could although be. I mean, there are some, the crime scene photos aren't, it's nothing like OJ Made in America level, but it's, you know, it's a little starchier than you might get on network. So that could be.
I'm sure
it could also be that
I was just going to say, sure it's not any more offensive than anything that happens in a given Teen Mom episode.
Well, really. I mean, I think also they can just put shit on. They could put shit on at 3. Like, I think MTV's demographic is, you know, young enough and cord cut enough that it doesn't necessarily matter where they put it in prime time. This old lady would like them to move it up or perhaps be offered a screener. But yeah, if you were unsure about it or thought it looked cheesy, give it a try. It's pretty good.
Cool.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara Ariano.
Well, it's summer rewatch streaming show time because Dave won't watch Flipping Out with me like a big jerk. So we've already gone through what are the shows that we've rewatched this summer already. We did The Thick of It.
Kroll Show.
We did Kroll Show was the one we just finished.
Yeah.
So now we're watching Key and Peele on Hulu. And if you somehow missed it in its first incarnation or its first run, the whole run of the show is on Hulu. God, it's so good. Every episode, it's so good. It really makes you forget. If the only sketch shows that you're used to watching are like SNL, it makes you remember like, oh, this is how much better a sketch show can be when they don't have to write it in 6 days.
Yeah.
Like it's everything is so smart and funny, except when it's stupid and funny, like the East West Bowl names. And recently, like a couple of days ago, we rewatched Dave's very favorite sketch.
Yeah. It's Key and Peele in a park, and Peele is leaning against a tree watching a lady doing yoga stuff, and he's like, I don't even know what I'm seeing. And Peele walks up. He's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, no.
She's getting undressed.
I have no idea. It keeps going like that. Gets more and more ridiculous as you...
What's under there? Her vagina. Maybe. No, it definitely is.
What's
what if it's
that?
Just more skin? Like, it's so weird.
And then it turns out at the end that he was an alien coming to Earth to collect data. And then he disappears. It is so stupid, but it is like my favorite kill. Key and Peele sketch of all time. You know what I've noticed this time that they are so good at that a lot of places, especially Saturday Night Live, are terrible at, is ending a sketch.
Yeah.
Like, they know when the joke is over. They know when they've milked it just enough to get the right amount of laughs out of it. And yep. then it's over.
It's over. Yep. Definitely. The other thing that I admire about the show, and I'm sure I talked about it on this podcast when it was still airing, was that when they try to do... But when they do sketches in different styles, like that are from different eras or something, if they're supposed to look like they're, it's a shitty dupe from the 80s or yeah. something, it looks like a shitty dupe from the 80s.
Like the they Mr. Really, T yeah. video.
The, yeah. The attention to detail is really impressive, and they don't have to spend that effort on it. Like, it would still be funny if they didn't, but it makes it so much better that they do.
You can tell that they have such pride of ownership
Absolutely.
Over their show.
Yeah, and Peter Tencio really... directed almost all of it. He also directed their movie Keanu, which is out on demand this week, I think. And he was like just so on point with all that stuff, and it really contributes to how good the show is overall, I think. All right. Anyway, Key and Peele, it's on Hulu. And for my plug, I'm going to plug something that's actually from our guest, which is Phil and his wife, Lisa Schmeiser, have been doing installments of reinvestigations of the Entertainment Weekly fall TV preview issues.
So good.
1997 so good. Was the first one, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There's going to be all the whole decade, all 10 issues will be investigated. I guess it's 11 if you're going to end on 2007. But anyway, they're up on previously.tv. They're so brilliant. It's amazing what a time capsule these things are, especially yeah. when you call out like, and this show that went on to be huge and giant only got this three columns, this tiny like little snippet of coverage, like the year that CSI premiered, it was barely covered in Entertainment Weekly, and that ended up being one of the biggest shows ever.
Like, EW used to be the entertainment bible. Like, that was like, you know, this is a pre-internet entity that was everything the internet was, you know, going to be
about
good
to
at.
Be.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in fact, the issue that I'm looking at now is the one where they stopped doing Saturday nights, and it's no longer the phone book thick-sized fall preview that used to come every year. It's kind of actually depressing me.
There was that, and then the other one, which was years before it, was the original giant-sized Premiere magazine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, I love that so much. It was so good. It was like it was really riding the line between accessible and fanatic.
Yeah.
And it did it so well, and I find early EW was exactly that, and, you know, now it's just like everything else, of course, but... Like,
so yeah, we'll link to the first one in the show notes, but yeah,
perfect time capsule material.
By the time you read this, the 2000 issue will have the coverage of the 2000 issue will have just published. So it's great work from you and Lisa. Thank you so much for doing it. I'm loving it.
Excellent.
Good.
All right, Philip, your turn.
Well, the Olympics are wrapping up as we're recording this, and maybe you're thinking, hey, I like sports and have no interior life, and I like international competition. What should I watch? Well, friend, what you can watch is the British Premier League on NBC, which for my money is actually the best produced sports coverage of any network. They really do a good job. First off, they don't tape delay it. It's on live here on the West Coast as I'm getting up on Saturday mornings, probably at a more decent time for viewers on the East Coast. Rebecca Lowe is the studio host. Again, the best studio host of any sport coverage ever. She's informed. She's pleasant. She doesn't overshadow the other people on the panel. She is fantastic. You may have seen her handling some of the Olympic coverage, and now she's going to be back in her natural environment, which is doing highlights of Liverpool-Bournemouth. So it's very good. I can't recommend it enough.
How do they deal with commercials?
They don't have commercials. They
show the scoreboard banners.
They have the little scoreboard up in the corner, and they show the first half, and then there'll be halftime, and they'll show a lot of commercials. Sure. Yeah. And then they'll come back for the second half, and it's a nice little two-hour package where you don't have to – I love baseball. It's my favorite sport. But on TV, you really have to block out anywhere from 2 to 5 hours because who knows how long that baseball game is going to go. You know with soccer because it's done. At the 90-minute whistle, the referee is, we're done, we're out of here, I got things to do.
I don't know if I'm that guy who's going to say a fact that everybody else just we know, but you know, I recently came across the tidbit that, you know, everybody, when you start saying soccer, they'll be, oh, you mean football, and you're like, yeah, fuck you. And then you're but like, soccer was actually what people, like, it was a common term even in Britain until like mid-century or so, when Americans started using it more, and they're like, ooh, poo-poo America, and then they kind of switched to football, too. So soccer isn't that alien.
No, it's not to
England. So, you know, get off your high horse. Fuck you. You're playing soccer. And what do you got to plug?
And your plug.
Well, on that note, since we're talking about a show about technology, Halt and Catch Fire, as part of my, you know, day regular career paying job, I actually am a tech reporter. I you can find a lot of my coverage, in fact, all of my coverage of technology at tomsguide.com, where we help you figure out what to buy. I am specializing currently in our coverage of mobile phones and wireless carriers. In a week and a half, I'm going to be flying to Berlin for the IFA trade show, where there'll be a bunch of laptops and smartphones announced, and we'll have coverage there. So be sure and check it out. That's tomsguide.com.
I will also say that show that you used to contribute to, the Macworld podcast back in the day. You used to do this, I forget what the name is, forgive me, but you used to do the Pundit Showdown?
Oh, the Pundit Showdown. That's still around on another better podcast network than Macworld. It's at theincomparable.com. We might we bring it back on occasion. It's very technically difficult to perform, and
I borrowed from that quite a bit when it came to do score breaks and stuff like that in game.
Oh, yes. So.
Yeah.
Well, I totally ripped it off from a BBC show.
There you go. Circle of life.
Genius. Steal.
If this is anyone other than Steve Allen, you're stealing my bit.
Yeah. All right, Sarah.
Speaking of British shows, Ripper Street. You might be wondering to yourself, self, did Ripper Street change much when it moved to Amazon Prime for its fourth season? Just kidding. Nobody was really wondering that except me, and even I didn't actually care that much. But I am still watching it. It is airing on Thursday nights on BBC America. It's a few episodes into the fourth season.
Didn't they move it to like 6 p.m.?
Yes, it's still... Huh?
Didn't they move it to like 6 p.m. on BBC America? Isn't like really early in the evening? Anyway.
Yeah, they might have. I flew to England and acquired the episodes, so I'm not sure when they're airing it. But the episodes are like these supersized, Sherlock-y, awkward length sometimes, so maybe they just parked it, and or no one cares. That could also be true. It still has the same annoying traits, namely that it tends to shoehorn in like anything that was happening in England roughly in the sort of end of the Victorian Regency. Everything from like the Elephant Man to actual Jack the Ripper to Ripper copycats, like, okay.
I know this is the wrong.
Settle down.
I know it's the wrong period, but as soon as you said that, my brain went to some sort of Jack the Ripper complaining about decimalization. That he's going, oh, I'm so used to shillings and pence, and now it's all this pounds, and everything's one point this, one point that. It'll drive a man to murder. Stab, stab, stab.
Or he's angry about Brexit. Or he's angry about the euro. Anyway. They're also quite anachronistic about the participation of women in things like that they would be participating in case solving. But I've sort of like, I've come to accept it because otherwise, first of all, Reed's daughter would be a simpering mess. Instead, she's kind of this PTSD weirdo who secretly reads her father's case files and he's always clutching his pearls about it. And second of all, Long Susan, the former prostitute, now escaped from death row lady, spoiler, I guess, just shivved someone between the ribs who was like a foot taller than she is. And third of all, she is hiding out with the Swearingen-esque Abel Croker, who is played by original UK Frank Gallagher, David Threlfall from the UK version of Shameless. He's hilarious. It's also total like steampunk porn, if you like that kind of thing. Like, in other words, it's exactly the same. It's this kind of like eye-rolly B-minus show that occasionally is awesome and hilarious. And Jerome Flynn is now the boss of the station and is getting to make even more "are you fucking kidding me" faces than usual, which was a lot. So I recommend it. My plug is for the brand new These Are Their Stories podcast about all franchises of Law & Order from the folks that brought you Crime Writers On. Tara and I will be on some of the inaugural episodes, and there is a trailer. You can hear us both doing our best material about Perp Face et al. So
we'll link it in the show notes.
Go subscribe to that. I can't wait until the first episode comes out.
In honor of our lead topic, I present you this 1980s advertisement with a certain starship captain.
Why buy just a video game from Atari or Intellivision? Invest in the wonder computer of the 1980s for under $300. The Commodore VIC-20. Unlike games, it has a real computer keyboard. With the Commodore VIC-20, the whole family can learn computing at home. Plays great games, too. Under $300, the wonder computer of the 1980s, the Commodore VIC-20.
Coming soon, Commodore brings you Gorf, the Wonder Arcade game, and Omega Race in home versions. Commodore.
All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Our guest is submitting this week. Take it away, Philip.
It is my favorite all-time episode of The Simpsons from season 4. Last Exit to Springfield, the episode where Homer becomes head of the power plant workers union.
Homer! Homer! Homer!
I move that Homer Simpson be our new union president. All in favor?
Aye!
All opposed?
Nay.
Congratulations, Homer!
Yay! Hey, what did this job pay?
Nothing.
Don't!
Unless you're crooked. Woohoo!
There's a lot of great union jokes in there. There's, of course, Mr. Burns negotiating with Homer, which is magnificent. But I think what I really love about this show is it's one of the instances of an early Simpsons episode where the A plot line of Homer leading the union and the B plot line of Lisa needing braces actually intersect and support each other, and that it's not just a bunch of random plots thrown together to see how many references you can get into an episode. That said, there are references aplenty. There's our good friend McBain shows up.
My friends, tonight we unveil my most diabolical creation. Swank. 10 times more addictive than marijuana. Ooh. To human misery.
Ice to see you.
McBain!
Yes, I don't know why, but McBain is one of my favorite recurring characters, and he's great here. He's felled by a salmon puff later on in that sequence. But you also get, speaking of recurring characters, a character who's not recurring, who was used just once, the evil dentist.
How often do you brush, Ralph?
3 times a day, sir.
Why must you turn my office into a house of lies?
he's magnificent. And again, I think my favorite Simpsons character is Mr. Burns. And on this show, we get to go on a flight of fancy into Mr. Burns's past, which again speculates that he's 150 years old.
Benefits, perks, a green cookie on St. Patrick's Day. Oh, it didn't used to be this way, Smithers. No, it didn't used to be this way at all.
Come on, come on, crack those atoms! You, tear out those pockets!
items. 1, 2, 3, 4. 6 of them. Take him away.
You can't treat the working man this way. One day we'll form a union and get the fair and equitable treatment we deserve. Then we'll go too far and get corrupt and shiftless. And the Japanese will eat us alive.
The Japanese? Those sandal-wearing goldfish tenders? Bosh, flimshaw. If only we had listened to that boy instead of walling him up in the abandoned coke oven.
Okay, before you go on, I just want to say his delivery of atoms is one of my all-time favorite Simpsons things.
Yes.
And the, you know, what tips that whole scene over is his sort of mumbling count. 6 of them is perfect. It is such good voice work.
Yes. And speaking of Mr. Burns, we also get the tour of his house, which includes this room.
This is 1,000 monkeys working at 1,000 typewriters. Soon, they'll have written the greatest novel known to man. Let's see. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. You stupid monkey. No, shut up.
Yes, because who doesn't dream of having a house with a room full of monkeys writing stories? I certainly do. And of course, finally, we have a frequent, even if you've never seen this episode, you've probably quoted a line from it or heard this very line quoted from it, from Grandpa Simpson, who's been brought in as a strike buster.
We can't bust heads like we used to, but we have our ways.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you got it.
One trick is to tell them stories that don't go anywhere. Like the time I caught the ferry over to Shelbyville. I needed a new heel for my shoe. So I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time. Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel. And in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. The important thing was that I had an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. They didn't have white onions because of the war. The only thing you could get was those big yellow ones.
And of course, the episode ends, as all classic sitcom episodes do, with them hitting the big reset button, because nothing must change in the episode. It must all go back to where it was. Homer is no longer head of the union through this this plot contrivance.
All right, Homer, you can have the dental plan on one condition. You must resign as head of the union. Smithers, I'm beginning to think that Homer Simpson was not the brilliant tactician I thought he was.
So, last exit to Springfield, everything that is good about The Simpsons, a very quotable episode, some memorable characters in it, and of course, Mr. Burns front and center with his weird interior creepy life.
This episode is so good that we were about 2 minutes in and then Dave was like, oh, did we already induct this into the canon? Because it seemed like such a crazy oversight that we had.
I was shocked that you had not, but happy that you had.
We had not. This is our first consideration of the episode. But God, it's so good for all the reasons that you said. It's the even the stuff that's a kind of a waste of time, like Lisa's Yellow Submarine fantasy. It's like it's still it still works somehow, even though I feel like it would never make it into an episode today, although how would I know? I don't watch it anymore. But all of the union stuff is so good. There's so many funny side bits too, like when Burns and Smithers go through all of the security doors to get to their like underground bunker, and then they get there and it's like secured with like a broken screen door and there's a dog in there.
That is, yes, really funny.
Yes.
But how is it that the dog that you see right at the end isn't the two-headed dog they created with the radioactive waste seen earlier?
Yeah. The robot, 100% loyal robot workers, the music on their like montage of them running the plant by themselves. It's just so good. My one thing is that I never noticed until this watching of it that there's a reference to the ferry to Shelbyville, when we know quite well you can just walk over the border to Shelbyville. There is no water barrier. Other than that, this is a perfect episode. Excellent choice. Dave.
Okay, well, first thing, we watched this on SimpsonsWorld.com, which is the FX Now thing, and weirdly dark transfer for something I thought they remastered for everything. I was surprised how, like, muddy the whites were in this, but, I mean, it's not the Simpsons' fault, but I just kind of figured they would have, you know, used levels and curves a little bit in their video application before they mastered this for the web.
Listen, you can see all six of the atoms in the kid's pocket. What are you complaining about?
That's true. What fidelity. There are so many little touches. I can't get to them all, but here are my favorites that were not mentioned in the pitch. There is a guy at the McBain meeting who grabs a piece of cake that was just dropped by a guy who was brutally murdered by McBain with like three gunshots in the head. And he grabs the plate before it hits the ground. He's just like super happy. Yay!
He's just so happy to have gotten that cake. It's all right.
It is such a great little moment. As I said before, atoms, just the fucking best. There is reference to the Springfield Grapplarium, which just cracks me up. Homer eating the sugar daddy. There is a certain disgustingness to the way he sort of like sucks on the sugar daddy that is like something that just wouldn't work in the era where everything is computerized in The Simpsons and everything is always on model. There is a charm to when it kind of goes off model because, you know, the poor Korean animator, you know, is working a 20-hour shift. He's just like, he's not on point anymore. Hired goons is one of my favorite Simpsons goons. What? Hired goons. And then he repeats it later. Fantastic. One question for the group is, you know, there is a generation now that has always lived with The Simpsons, and, you know, it's sort of like the air they breathe now. And there are references in here that obviously are just going to fly over their heads. I'm just wondering what you think the cutoff is, because there's like the Batman mirror reference. And it actually took me a moment rewatching this. It's like, okay, I know that's a reference. What's it from? And, I haven't watched Batman for 20 years. And then it finally clicked in. But, like, how much of The Simpsons flies over your head?
Oh,
when you're a millennial or whatever.
Yeah, like, I bet if you're 25, there's a lot that you miss.
Yeah. You know, it's still funny, but you're like, oh, yeah. Because, I mean, The Simpsons early years did a lot more of that until, you know, that basically became, they surgically removed that and, you know, Seth MacFarlane put it in a Petri dish and made Family Guy out of that, you know, system of comedy. And of course, 5 B's for a quarter, a classic line. This is one of the best Simpsons episodes.
For sure.
It is like wall to wall funny, and you're right. I think the Yellow Submarine is probably the weakest part of this episode, and it's still really good.
Yep.
So, Sarah, you're our sitcom comedy curmudgeon. What did you think?
It's true. Speaking of curmudgeons and onions, Pearl, my cat, is now sitting on my notes, so I'm not sure I will remember all of the references, but I was a regular Simpsons watcher until, like, it's amazing how long ago I quit it. I guess it was season 8. Like, me and my then-boyfriend Steve looked at each other after a season premiere and were like, well, they had a good run. Little did we know. 20 years later. But I loved, Grandpa is probably my favorite character, the boring story and the way it, like, it doesn't go anywhere and then it doubles back on itself and they cut away to them sighing and, like, it's just perfectly timed. My second favorite character, I believe, is Kent Brockman, and he's like, his delivery of, I believe you had an opening tirade prepared, and Burns is like, yes. It's just them firing on all cylinders, and it's well before that period, which is most of the show.
They write old people so well on these early seasons.
Yeah.
Burns, even Jasper. Like,
Jasper.
Yeah, he's a great little character. Like, they just nail it. I know Conan O'Brien is like really into like old guy talk. Was he writing?
And I think that's where
he was the producer on this episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's where we bailed is when he left. Mm. So I think that was after season 7. I'm not sure. But anyway, it had been a while since I'd watched The Simpsons, and I couldn't believe how many of the like go-to references were in there. Yep. Of course, any reference to bees, I enjoy. the negotiating scene where, like, does it take a whiz to see that we're number one? Homer really has to pee. Like, you watch Simpsons now and it's like, it's not that it's bad, or like you watch it season 11. It's not that it's bad, but they know like they're standing back from the jokes.
It's a formula at that point.
Yeah.
And then Homer is like, it's not this like sort of stupid food obsessed Homer. It's like a completely different, like, it had come back around to like this abusive Homer, but also it wasn't really that funny that someone would be that dim-witted that they probably couldn't live on their own.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, this is absolutely peak Simpsons. It was really a joy to see it. Thank you for making us watch it.
Yeah. Yay. One of the best. Yeah, for definitely. Sure. All right. So let's put this to a vote. Tara Ariano.
Oh, yay. Definitely.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, sir.
Yes, for me too. That means The Simpsons, Season 4, Episode 17, Last Exit to Springfield. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody, it is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
I do. Bear with me because this is going to be a little bit long. Winner of the week is Katy Perry, and here is why. Because then this week's episode of Catfish was about the person who wrote in was this person named Spencer, and he wanted help getting to meet his online girlfriend of 6 years, the pop star Katy Perry.
Oh, no. What's this guy's name?
Spencer.
Oh, Spencer.
He was convinced that she was really his online girlfriend. Despite the fact that they'd only talked on the phone one time and it was from a Calgary cell phone. She was on tour in Canada at the time. I won't relitigate the case against this idiot because it's all in my post on previously.
Was Spencer Simple?
He might have been a little mentally ill because when Max and Neve go and present him with the evidence that they found the real person who's been posing as Katy Perry, this girl, Harriet, who lives in England. He's like, well, it does seem to point to her. And then we get a diary cam of him where he's like, I went back and listened to Katie's latest album and it's full of clues that I'm supposed to figure out. And I have, and I know that this isn't her. And even when he meets her.
This is a sad story.
Listen, the reason Katy Perry is the winner is that, you know, Catfish would have loved to have her like supply a video message that was like, sorry, Spencer, it's not me. But she didn't. She is nowhere in this episode other than being talked about. The rest of it is pretty depressing. Dave is right. And this person is probably either super good at faking or actually mentally ill. All of that said, I didn't make the TV show broadcast itself to me. Yeah. I just watched it and it was a barn burner. So good job, Katy Perry, having nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
All
it's
right.
A lot.
Yeah. All right. Sarah, loser of the week. Not Spencer.
One of the losers is this guy for suggesting on Twitter, and not like kind of meaning it, that this was all conspiracy theory, but it was Katy Perry, and she just wanted people to remember that she existed to drive sales of her Olympics related single, which is not good, but a total earwig. Other losers include Comedy Central. Personages, Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore got canceled, and there was an ongoing flap. I mean, like the Amy Schumer, Kurt Metzger flap, I feel like has been flapping for a while, but to the point where like she, I'm sure, had a lip full of rosé and was just sick of people asking about it. And she made she tweeted something that made people think the show had been canceled. She had to walk that back. She had to explain her side of it yet again on Charlie Rose.
If you missed it, what happened was Kurt Metzger, who is a stand-up comic and a writer on her show, went on this like multi-post, speaking of an opening tirade, this like weird, crazy rant on Facebook about an allegation about someone who was a UCB comic in LA that he had been accused of raping several other women in the comedy field. And he was like basically making the rape apology case. And then it blew back on Amy Schumer because she was
this is
boss.
Some this is not Metzger. Let's.
Yeah, no. Right? He was not the rapist. It was some other person.
Correct.
Who I don't know that person's name. Was not him. But he was like saying, you know, basically was like, well, women lie about rape and blah, blah, blah. I'm obviously oversimplifying it. You can Google it for all the details. But then it blew back on Amy Schumer because it was like, this is your employee. How do you defend this? And, you know, once again, this becomes a woman's fault. Cool. Way to go, patriarchy. But anyway, continue, Sarah. Not.
Yeah, that's all I had. Sort of a rough week for people working or not working at Comedy Central. Kinda. Not to worry, though, that Inside Amy Schumer is back, but she says it's on indefinite hiatus. So
yeah, she's got other things to do.
Well, yeah, speaking of rough things that make you scratch your head, do you guys know what time it is?
Is it
game time? It's game time. Okay, everybody, this is the second game time of the season. Tara was the winner of last week. Today we are playing the Delightful Dozen. The Ooh. Delightful Dozen from Extra Hot Great Game Time staple Rob Hartman.
Oh yeah.
Earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an Extra Hot Great mini topic of his choosing. Okay. In the Delightful Dozen, players will be tested on their knowledge of some of TV's most beloved stars. In the first round, you must identify the stars from audio clips. In the second round, you'll be asked which of those same stars said or did particular things. And in the final round, players answer true or false questions about the stars of their choice.
Hi.
Ooh.
Each question worth 1 point, no hints. All right?
All right.
Yep.
All right. With that, let's ask the person in control choosing Initiative 3000, a.k.a. Picky, to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, so that means Philip Michaels, and then Tara Ariano, and then Sarah D. Bunting. That is our order.
All righty.
Are we ready to play the Delightful Dozen?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
We're going to give the valued guest 1 day point for answering something correctly, technically the best kind of correct. Here is your clip. Who is this?
I am so grateful to each and every one of those evil, adorable, wonderful, nasty people.
Do you know what TV star that is?
Is that TV star Betty White?
You have 1 point, sir.
Well done.
Right. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Needless to say, this is totally expected on my part.
You play it again.
Needless to say, this is totally expected on my part.
I know this isn't right, but Louis C.K.?
Incorrect. That is Chevy Chase. And
damn
now you
it.
Understand that beloved is in quotes.
Oh.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Don't believe everything that you read. And to paraphrase Mark Twain, half the things you read about me are untrue and the other half are lies. Remember that, and thank you.
Sorry, I laughed at the end.
Want to hear that again?
Sure, why not?
Don't believe everything that you read, and to paraphrase Mark Twain, half the things you read about me are untrue, and the other half are lies. So just remember that, and thank you.
And you probably should get this.
You definitely know this.
Yeah, I was just thrown off by the absence of weird pronunciations in there, but I'm pretty sure it's Shannon Doherty.
Indeed it is.
Nice.
Okay, back to Philip. Here is your second question.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to talk about in therapy next week now. This is... I won something, so... Wow.
Wow, indeed.
And while you're thinking, I just want to remind everybody, you should be remembering all these people because, of course, they will be coming back in rounds 2 and 3.
Yes.
Is it Kirstie Alley?
No, it is Tara's favorite actress.
Julie Bowen!
Julie Bowen. Okay, Tara.
Yep.
Thank you. Usually I come here and eat a very casual 2-minute meal and then... sit and watch everybody else just walk off with ease.
Is that boss Kelsey Grammer?
It is. All right, Sarah.
I never thought this was going to happen. Ah, hi! one of our show creators last week said to me, okay, if they call your name, do you have something funny to say? And I said, look who you're talking to. And he said, right, you're the least funny person on the planet. And I said, absolutely.
I feel like I'm sensing a theme here. I don't know who it is, but I'm going to guess Deborah Messing.
Yeah!
Hey!
Well, she is right about being the least funny person on the planet.
It's rare that somebody like that is self-aware. Back to Mr. Michaels.
People say, well, you can abuse marijuana. Well, shit, you can abuse cheeseburgers, too. You know, you don't go around closing Burger King because you can abuse something. I can take a fucking fork and jam it in my eyeballs. That mean forks should be illegal?
Well.
Now it does.
He raises good points.
I'll give you a little hint.
Yeah.
Before he is who he is today, he was on a very good sitcom.
Is it Joe Rogan?
Nice.
Oh! who once gave me a dirty look at a craft services table on a news radio set. Oh,
that monster.
Did you take the last something? Did you take the last super extra large protein bar he was having his eye on?
I don't know. He sensed that I shouldn't be there, and he was probably right. But there you go.
All right. But back to Tara.
I want to dedicate this award to my amazing cast, every single one of you. You're my family, and all of you are my best friends, and I'm an only child, and now I have 11 other siblings, and you guys are the best.
Oh, God.
Who is that bubbly tart?
This probably isn't right either, but Leighton Meester?
Thought you had it there for a sec. No. Leah Michelle?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, her.
All right. Sarah.
Yep. Excuse me, sir. Those lights advertise that you're a piece of shit. Excuse me, sir. Are you a little Japanese girl? Then what the fuck are you wearing?
Give you a little hint. Tara's favorite person in the whole world.
My God. That could be anybody.
One of Tara's favorite people in the whole world.
Can I hear the clip again, please?
You may.
Excuse me, sir. Those lights advertise that you're a piece of shit. Excuse me, sir. Are you a little Japanese girl? Then what the fuck are you wearing?
Oh, my God. I'm going to be so mad at myself. I don't know who it is.
I don't either.
Chris D'Elia.
Oh!
I was going to say Brad Garrett, but yeah.
I got no beef with Brad Garrett.
You should. He's gross.
Okay.
All right. Here is your last question of the first round.
Have you ever thought about waxing your chest?
Well, totally out of the question.
Right?
My chest hair is almost as much a part of my identity as my face is at this point, so.
That was obviously the guy who's answering the question in that clip.
Okay. And he has a hairy chest.
Yeah, and one more clue for you, because I'm being very generous today with clues.
Yeah.
Mentioned in this episode of Extra Hot Great already.
Wow. I should have listened more closely to what people were talking about. Mentioned already, hairy chest. He wasn't mentioned, but Chris Kattan? I don't know.
Tara, do you know who that is?
No.
That is Neve Schulman from Catfish.
I knew that one. Damn it.
All right, Sarah, here's your last question of the first round.
Nope.
It's for Tara.
I mean, Tara, sorry. Yeah. Tara.
It really is all about the fans, and you've been so supportive the whole time that I was on the show, and I really miss them already. I know they're filming their fourth season, so all right, I love you so much. Thank you.
Ooh, this isn't right either, but Katherine Heigl?
Misha Barton.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, up there, sucking on her Magnum ice cream pop.
Nope.
No, not her.
That's
the other one. That's Bison or whatever.
That's Mila Kunis.
No, is it?
I think so.
No.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Really?
I thought
it was Rachel something from... Who's the Heart
Actually,
of Dixie
I think it
person?
Is Bilson.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so a half recovery for Dave.
Right, this is to Sarah.
Last question of the first round for Sarah. Here you go.
I don't think there's any kind of method to anything that I do, nor do I think there's any kind of Stella Adler or, you know, anything. I'm a student of life.
Yuck. Who is that?
Ew. I'm a student of life?
Mm. I'll say this. Everybody hates this guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't
No, I know, but I'm just saying. Once you hear the name,
down,
you
really?
It, like,
oh, I'm sorry. Can I hear it again?
You may.
I don't think there's any kind of method to anything that I do, nor do I think there's any kind of Stella Adler or, you know, anything. I'm a student of life.
He's a student of
it's
life.
Not Shia. Michael Pitt?
Oh, good guess. He is hateful.
Any other guesses?
No, I don't know who that
Gilmore
is.
Girls?
Oh, Heroes? Is it Milo Ventimiglia?
It is.
Ew.
All right, everybody, that is end of round one. Tara Ariano, may we please have the scores?
We may. It is a very close game. I have 1 point. Phil and Sarah are tied with 2 apiece.
All right. So that means we're starting round two. Back to Philip. Remember, I'm going to ask you a question. You're going to tell me which of the people from round one did or said it.
Got it.
Who allegedly did this? During a delay in shooting, this person snapped their fingers at the crew and said, "Let's go. I have plans."
Wow, that could be all of them, but I'll guess that's a Deborah Messing kind of thing.
That was Leah Michelle. Leah Michelle. All right.
What a shithead.
Tara.
Yes.
Who did this?
Okay.
Got into a flame war on MySpace in 2006 with a fan, ending with, you're an ugly fat face zero, and I'm a famous multimillionaire. Those are the facts right there, dear sweet Kevin.
Joe Rogan?
Oh, shit. You are correct.
Wow. Nice. I got Sarah. Off easy at that craft services table.
Who said this, Sarah D. Bunting? The truth is, pretty people aren't as accepted as other people. It comes with all these stigmas.
Oh, poor soul. Poor Misha Barton.
Nice.
Who said this? So.
Phil, this is to Phil.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, how about Joe Biden, huh? What a year. I can't believe he said my character was responsible for gay marriage. I don't know if it was the forefront of my mind when I was playing the character, but it was definitely my subtext.
I'm going to go with Deborah Messing again.
Word.
Yeah.
Yay. Correct.
This is question 17.
Fred Eagle.
Fred Eagle.
Or Tara. Mm-hmm. Who said this? I probably feel 50% responsible for what has happened to me. In my first year on the show, I was overwhelmed by so much responsibility and pressure that I didn't handle things in a very diplomatic manner.
Is this Shannon Doherty?
You bet it is. All right. Back to Sarah. Who said this? If you want me on this fucking show again, I got news for you. I don't want it. It's just a fucking mediocre sitcom. I want people to laugh, and this isn't funny. Here's a hint. This was in a voicemail. That was said in a voicemail to a show creator.
This was said in a voicemail.
Oh, yeah, I remember this now.
Yep.
I don't, so I'm going to go with Kelsey Grammer.
That is everybody's most beloved actor, Chevy Chase to Dan Harmon of Community.
That twat. All right.
Number 19. Back to Mr. Michaels. Who said this of one of her co-stars? She found me a pain in the neck sometimes. It was my positive attitude.
I'd really love to say Deborah Messing again, but I'm going to go with Betty White here.
Nice.
You are correct. Nice. Tara.
Yep.
Who said this about Justin Bieber? It's impossible to talk to him without flirting. Possible to talk to him without flirting. Hurry up.
Are people in here more than once?
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, yes. Sorry. I see what you mean. Yes. Okay. They're everybody's getting...
okay, so two. It might be someone whose name's already been said in this round. Okay, Leah Michelle. Is it
Chris
Julie Bowen?
D'Elia.
Oh!
And then he probably followed up with a terrible gay joke. All right, to Sarah. Who said, yes, absolutely, I'll be back. I don't care if I'm in Tunisia doing a movie. I'll fly home because I love you guys so much. And then I'll go back to my job in Tunisia. As it turns out, I don't have a job in Tunisia. I'm here in L.A., which is nice.
Okay. Is that Milo?
It is. Subtext, I got nothing going on. Please write me into the Girlfriend
Girls. Nor should you.
Who wrote this, Philip? Okay. Nice girls made me really nervous, claustrophobic. But broken women, women in pain, women looking to be fixed. Ah, for these women, the doctor was in gross. He didn't say gross.
Ew.
That was me.
I can only, in my fantasy world, Kelsey Grammer does refer to himself as the doctor. So Kelsey Grammer.
Your fantasy is made true.
Yes.
Kara Ariano.
Yes.
Who said, I thought I could put all the negative stuff away in a box, the hypersexuality, the lack of focus, the general dickishness, and work on trying to be the good person I hoped to be. Who said that?
Is it Chevy Chase again?
No. It's come on. That's Neve.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. All right.
Fucking Neve.
Bring us into our second score break for Sarah. Who said this? These babies are great. They are my prize winners. They were nervous to make their appearance, but they feel like they have earned their place. So they asked if they could come out, and I was like, all right, you guys.
Is this individual talking about his or her breasts?
Maybe.
Maybe. I think this is Shannon again.
Shannon?
Shannon Doherty.
Oh, Shannon. No, that was Glee star Leah Michelle talking about her boobs. Oh. Yeah. All right. Quick score break, please, Tara.
Okay. Still very close.
This is our half point.
Okay. I have 3 points. Sarah has 4 points. Phil has 5 points.
All right. So more of who said who did. 12 more questions. Who said this, Philip? My job really amounts to me falling down and making faces while wearing lipstick and nipple covers.
Good Lord. Falling down and making faces and nipple covers. That could be anyone. It's not Chevy Chase again, is it?
Well, I could see why you would guess that with the falling down.
Deborah
falling
Messing?
Down.
Julie Bowen.
Oh, that was my second choice.
Oh.
Barfo.
Tara.
Yep.
Who did this with singer Luciana? All right. Released a remix of I'm Still Hot. Who did this?
The Barton?
Oh, Tara. Betty White. Come on, that's some old grandma thing.
She just keeps punishing you, Tara.
I bet she did the rap break in the middle.
I'm sure she did.
Sarah D. Bunting, who did this? After the Ray Rice scandal, tweeted a picture of themselves in the elevator declaring, this elevator is abuse-free.
Oh.
This elevator... Was that Neve again?
Yes! That fucker.
Douche.
Okay.
That's that girl on the dance floor, bitch.
Back to the beginning. Who did this, Mr. Michaels? Posted about police brutality on Instagram with a photo of themselves sipping on a cocktail in a swimsuit on a yacht.
Well, that'd be Misha Barton.
That it would indeed.
That was rough.
Tara.
Yep.
Who said this? There was too much drama on the set and not enough passion for the work. I don't have time for drama in my life anymore. I'll miss co-star a lot. She's one of my best friends, and I love her dearly. And there was never, ever, ever any problems between the two of us.
Shannon? Doherty? Okay.
You are correct.
Who did she say? Tori?
I don't know. Just,
redacted.
Redacted, okay. Yeah.
I think she meant Holly Marie.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. The two sets that she had trouble on.
Sarah D. Bunting, who said this? I'm not worried about offending people. That's part of the job. I secretly get excited when I offend someone.
Not worried about offending people. Delia?
Yep. Ugh. Who said this? I'm a horrible sponge monkey. If I spend half a day with you and your accent, I would start doing it, and I would do it horribly, but I wouldn't be able to stop myself.
Joseph Rogan.
Julie Bowen. Wow. Damn. All right.
The monkey part is right.
Yes. Tara,
yeah.
Who said this? I had this idea in my isolation tank once that alien life is probably not going to come here in a ship, but rather travel as an idea and go directly into our minds.
What?
Oh my God, who has an isolation tank? Is this Joe Rogan? Gorgeous.
All right, Sarah, who does this? Carried a pole around the grounds of their home to protect guests from their attack chicken.
It's not you yet.
No, not yet. Attack chicken?
Yeah, who has an attack chicken?
I think Leah Michelle has an attack chicken.
That would be Chevy Chase.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. That dickwad.
All right. Here is everybody's last who said did this.
Okay.
Philip, I'm a very entertaining, complex guy. I've never been a crossdresser. I don't live as a crossdresser, but I've been very sexually adventurous. And here's an additional clue. This was said to Oprah.
Boy.
Oh.
Opening up to Oprah.
Kelsey Grammer.
Yep.
Oh.
Gross.
Oh. Tara.
Oh. Yes.
Who said, I've done nude scenes enough time to know exactly strategically how to place my manhood so as to be respectful of the crew and my co-star.
Manhood.
But when I saw the trailer, I'm like, wow, man, that is my ass, and that is my ass before my face. Don't understand what that means, but there you go.
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase. That is our good friend Milo.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, last question of this round to Sarah. A critic wrote this about whom? Wearing Spanx and having a messy car does not a full character make. She keeps mumming things up at work. Aren't all mums just mumming everything with their mumness?
Deborah?
Yeah, and that was in nice. Relation to the Mysteries of Laura. All right.
Of course. Well, starting to pull away, guys. I have 5. You guys are tied with 7 each. Phil
okay.
And Sarah.
Everybody has, I think, 4 questions left in our final round. You tell me the actor you want to hear a true or false question about.
Okay.
All right.
Ooh.
And I will try to keep track of who's been done.
Okay.
So, Philip, who do you want?
It's from the ones we've already heard. I'm just not pulling random actor. Okay.
That would be, yeah. We'd
Laurence
have to get
Olivier.
We'd have to get Watson in here for that, but yeah.
Okay. Chevy, I'll take Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase, true or false, when he guest hosted Saturday Night Live, he pitched a sketch where Terry Sweeney would have AIDS and get weighed every week.
That is totally true.
That is totally true.
Fucking pig.
All right. Tara.
I gotta go Neve.
Neve, true or false, tweeted during the Black Girls Rock Award show, hashtag Black Girls Rock, I totally agree. They also tend to catfish a lot, just saying.
That is true. I saw it when it happened.
Oh, God.
All right, Sarah, who do you want?
I'll go Shannon.
All right. Shannon Doherty, true or false, wrote Badass, a hard-earned guide to living life with style and, in brackets, the right attitude.
I read it. It's true.
You did, and it
sucks.
Is. Back to Philip. Who do you want?
I'm going to go with my beloved lunch companion, Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan, true or false, wrote a book called Protein, the Real Man's Guide to Nutrition.
It sounds like something he would write, but then I'm not sure that he would write. So I'm going to say false.
Correct.
Wow.
Sounds true. In fact, is not.
Wow.
Tara, who do you want?
Well, I got to go Deborah Messing, I guess.
Deborah Messing, true or false?
Yep.
Wrote a book called Mumtastic, Finding Your Inner Grace.
I think that's false.
Indeed, it is false. Sarah?
I'll take Barton.
Barton, true or false? Sued her mother for breach of contract.
I think that's true.
Indeed, it is.
Sure feels true.
Yeah. Everybody's got 2 left, I believe. Yes, 2 left, yeah. It looks like. So, Philip, who do you want?
I feel that I've been inside Kelsey Grammer's head, so I'd like to stay there.
True or false about Kelsey Grammer? In all of his dressing rooms and trailers, insists on full spectrum light bulbs and 2 Hitachi magic wands.
Ew.
Talking about riders, folks.
Oddly specific, so I'll say true.
Incorrect.
No! Thank God.
Yeah. Hitachi magic wands. Yikes. Okay, Tara.
How about Chris D'Elia?
Chris D'Elia, true or false, wrote a book called Be the D-Bag, Winning at Dating and Life.
I think that's true.
It is. See, gotcha.
Thank
you
God.
Wanted to believe it. Hartman. Okay, so we are to Sarah.
I will take Betty White.
Betty White, true or false, was sued by Rue McClanahan over property damage from a minor car accident.
Huh. That's a tough one. I just have no idea. I don't think that happened. False.
You are correct. Come on.
Nice.
She's a friend. And she was thanked for it. All right. Last one. You got Julie Bowen, Leah Michele, or our friend Milo?
I'm going to go with Julie Bowen.
Julie Bowen, true or false question. During the run of Ed, sued a hairdresser who damaged her hair by over-bleaching.
True.
False.
No.
Oh, Hartman's got those ones that you want to believe so bad. All right, Leah or Milo?
Leah.
True or false? Wrote a book called You First, Journaling Your Way to Your Best Life.
False.
True.
Wah, wah,
wah, wah. All right, so that means you get stuck with Milo. For Sarah, true or false? During Comic-Con, Drunk tweeted 9 tweets about his relationship with peanut butter.
I mean,
yeah.
Rob Hartman, you are a magnificent bastard.
Yeah.
But a bastard nonetheless. I think that might be true.
False. He is a bastard, and that was false. Although that would have been fantastic. All right, that is it. Let's hear the final scores.
I think I may have not had a point to fill that should have. So can we just recap his questions from this round? Did you
we
get
may.
Them all right?
Let's
you,
do
there
it.
Were 4, right?
I got 2 right in this round.
Okay, so I then I, it's correct. All right, so then I have 7, Phil has 9, Sarah wins with 10.
Whoa!
Oh my God, it's been like a year!
Congratulations, Sarah.
You,
all right, before we end the show, do we want to do our tiebreaker questions for shits and giggles?
Sure.
And
sure.
5 Dave points.
Oh my God.
All right, so okay. The answer is somebody from this game. The question is, at a roast, Martha Stewart said this about who? I've come up with a douche that no one has ever heard of. You know, like blank.
Chevy.
Nope.
Betty White.
Tara. I've come up with a douche that no one has ever heard of. You know, like blank. Come on, let's go. Answer.
Betty White. No, that was already said. I don't know.
Yes.
Leah Michele.
Nope, I give nobody any day points. That is Chris D'Elia, which was the correct answer.
Sarah.
Congratulations,
wins.
Sarah.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
Yay.
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We rebooted our discussion of AMC's period compudrama, Halt and Catch Fire, before going around the dial with stops at Key & Peele, the Premier League, Ripper Street, and the Shat Shilling for the Vic 20. Philip pitched us the no-brainer Last Exit to Springfield, one of the Simpsons' best episodes for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Delightful Dozen Game Time. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano...
It was the blurst of times!
Sarah D. Bunting.
As was the style at the time.
And Philip Michaels.
Organized crime.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grit.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
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 Dental Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
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 Dental Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
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 This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.